Happy birthday, USA, and welcome to our Independence Day edition of the Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you with us on this Friday, July the 4th. And we thank our two Week in Reviewers for spending some of their holiday with us, too. Bill Krause and Peg Lautenschlager will talk with us about the political news of the week, from all the patriotic-themed rhetoric from the campaign trail to the latest news about the state budget, and maybe even a little talk about Brett Favre later, and whatever else is on your mind at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. Bill Krause joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Morning, Joy, and your morning, Peg.
And Peg is on phone. Hi.
Hey, good morning, Joy, and good morning, Bill. Sorry I can't be with you this morning, but I'm enjoying a weekend in my hometown of Fond du Lac. So.
Well, you are entitled to do that. Thanks for joining us by phone. Well, it is the 4th of July, and we have heard a lot of talk on the campaign trail about patriotism this week. Barack Obama started the week with a big speech on patriotism, presumably, the pundits say, to convince independent voters in the center that he is patriotic. And here's a quick clip from his speech on Monday.
Throughout my life, I've always taken my deep and abiding love for this country as a given. It was how I was raised. It is what propelled me into public service. It is why I am running for president.
So, Peg, I know you're a Barack Obama supporter. Is he being forced to tell us all how patriotic he is?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think tragically we have used patriotism in a divisive way in our national as well as state and local political systems. I was amazed yesterday as I was leaving work, one of the support staff folks in our office came up to say she had been disappointed in her sister, a woman who lives in Florida, who had said she couldn't vote for Barack Obama because he was a terrorist. And she asked him why, and she said, well, because he doesn't believe in God. You know, I think for a lot of us who read the newspapers regularly, get involved in politics and the like, we think of that kind of notion as being absolutely ludicrous and something which, you know, oversimplifies all sorts of things about politics, political issues, and people's personal religious beliefs. But unfortunately, I think in this day and age of easy access to a variety of information and misinformation, these kinds of things are the focus. And historically, we have seen elections where the patriotism of a number of people is called into question. You look at the Swift boat things with John Kerry, and here a fellow who, despite all of his wealth and privilege, opted to join the military, serve with dignity, put his life in harm's way, and yet his patriotism and his military duty was called into question by one of these goofy smear campaigns. I think because of that kind of thing, Obama is rightly attempting to ensure that he says out loud what Americans should know, and that is that much of his activity throughout his lifetime has been fostered and driven by his deep and abiding love for the country.
Yeah, Obama's talk about patriotism was overshadowed somewhat this week when General Wesley Clark made a remark on CBS's Face the Nation that flying a fighter jet and getting shot down is not a qualification for president. Speaking, of course, of John McCain, he said that McCain's military experience, while deserving of respect, was not the kind of military experience that prepares you to be commander-in-chief, to which John McCain said this.
I'm proud of my record of service, and I have plenty of friends and leaders who will attest to that. But the important thing is, and if that's the kind of campaign that Senator Obama and his surrogates and his supporters want to gauge, I understand that. But it doesn't reduce the price of a gallon of gas by one penny. It doesn't achieve our energy independence.
Yeah, so, Bill Krause, what do you make of this, a fight over patriotism?
Well, it's a symptomatic of the ad hominem that campaigns have degenerated to. What I want to know about is what their ideas are, what their plans are, who they're bringing to the government with them. I have no interest in their faith life, their sex life, or their anything else that the People magazine people...
Mark me with Bill on that, if that's okay.
To steal a quote from the Declaration of Independence, we should hold the truths to be self-evident, that anybody in that position, the position these two men are in, have been practicing an honorable trade and are superior people, or they wouldn't be where they are. So let's get off of that and get on to what Bill Sapphire described 30 years ago as hardening of the arteries of this country, which is now, we're almost locked into the status quo. We're immobilized by the lack of new ideas, by the lack of flexibility, by the protectionism of powerful interests and...
And I think Bill, your concern is a correct one, but I think it also plays both ways. I mean, we are in a situation where the Clark remarks aren't relevant to the essential issue debates at hand. But likewise, I'm not certain that the McCain claims in television ads and the like. Regarding this service, that clearly is meant to strike at the hearts of Americans in terms of showing, you know, what he has given up for this nation, whether it's voluntary or involuntarily. And sort of, is there a nexus between service as a prisoner of war and or sort of military service, which included an outrageously long stint as a prisoner of war, and how that impacts what you do in foreign policy? If you're going to bring that sort of issue out, I think it's American public deserves to know why that time in captivity impacts the candidate's view of foreign policy and how that connection can be made. Mm-hmm. And so, you can't kind of have it both ways. I think you can't pull that sort of thing out as evidence of your ability to deal with foreign policy, but at the same time not be willing to draw the connection between the two.
We can move on to some issues, including foreign policy issues. Barack Obama getting questioned yesterday about whether he was reversing himself on his position on wanting to withdraw troops quickly from Iraq. The McCain campaign was saying that Obama was flip-flopping on this issue, and that brought Barack Obama back to the microphone.
What I said this morning and what I will repeat, because it's consistent with what I've said over the last 2 years, is that in putting this plan together, I will always listen to the advice of commanders on the ground, but that ultimately I'm the person who is making the strategic decisions.
So, Peg, is Obama moving to the center on this one?
Well, I think, first of all, the notion of flip-flopping was something we used 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Let's get on to some new campaign theme on why you can trash the other mm-hmm. party. I don't think he is. I mean, obviously, candidates move somewhat to the center as they get into general elections. You see that with the Democrats being somewhat less left-leaning. You see that with Republicans as being somewhat less right-leaning. John McCain certainly repositioned himself in the primary election to cater to kind of right-wing core voters in the Republican Party. You see him now moving a little bit back to the center with thoughts of somebody like Charlie Crist as being called upon as his vice president. I think you see that with Obama, but I think you also, though, see that it isn't necessarily a move to the middle as much as a move to say, hey, don't oversimplify what I said and make it into some sort of one-line soundbite that mischaracterizes where I am and where I've been historically.
Any thoughts, Bill Cross, on if Barack Obama is indeed moving to the middle because he can't win without appealing to those voters in the middle, and his liberal base is getting a little bit upset with him this week.
The fringe bases of both people are always going to be upset because they're not going to get their way, which they shouldn't get their way. The thing that McCain did fundamentally that was so admirable and revived him was he moved away from the base. He pushed the theocrats aside and said, this isn't about being born again. This is about running the country. And there was an amazing response. You know, his comeback is almost more amazing than Barack's emergence. And now, unfortunately, he's moving back to pick up those people. Those people got no place to go. They could stay home, but they aren't going to control this election. The election's going to be controlled in the middle. And McCain's chances of winning, which are dim, depend almost entirely on separating himself from this administration, which has a popularity rating of 16% or something.
Well, and Bill, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, and I think for both of us who are, you know, have been described occasionally as old school when it comes to our political thought these days, I think the appeal of both of these candidates to large portions of people, not only in their party, but people who kind of stake out that middle independent ground, has been the fact that they seem to be not just another politician, people who had kind of a set of core values and beliefs, and they were willing to articulate them and pick up a leadership role in terms of convincing the American public of a good direction. In a reasonable direction to take. And I think that as they kind of back away from that and play politics as usual, it disappoints a large block of voters out there who respect them not necessarily for the particular position they're taking, but the fact that they're taking a position.
Yeah, what we admire McCain for was his independence from doctrinaire people, and what we admired Obama about was his new view of the approach of change. And if they're going to abandon, say, okay, I got my nomination now I'm going to go back and play wedge politics and pick up all of these little segments and play the game that the hired guns advise them and personal attacks, they're going to be diminished in certainly in my eyes, and I think generally.
We are talking with Bill Krause. He is a political strategist. He is an aide to former Wisconsin Governor Lee Dreyfus from 1979 to 1982. And Bill also still with Wisconsin Common Cause. And Peg Lautenschlager, attorney with Lawton and Cates, a former Wisconsin Attorney General and state legislator and U.S. attorney for that matter. And you can join us as we review the news of the week at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock. John Munson in for Ben Marins today, asking you for your pick on this week's most significant news story. That's after 4 this afternoon. This is our Friday Week in Review. We talk with two guests from different perspectives about all the big political news of the week. Today we have with us Peg Lautenschlager and Bill Krause, and we welcome your input, too. Before we get to the phones, some other news from the campaign trail, the presidential campaign trail this week. We have Barack Obama coming out in favor of expanding faith-based initiatives this week, faith-based initiatives, having religious organizations help the government taking care of people in need of social services. Some were particularly concerned that Barack Obama would be talking about expanding a Bush administration program and expressed some concerns about church state separation. Are those concerns of yours, Peg?
Yeah, they absolutely are. And it's interesting, though, because I think coming from a culture that I do, you know, living in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, working in Madison and the like, I get concerned about faith-based initiatives because I believe that there are other options and opportunities out there where we can do things in a more secular way and not isolate people who hold a minority view when it comes to various religions. And I feel strongly about that, and I feel strongly about separation of church and state. That being said, though, I think if you come from a different world viewpoint and look in historically economically challenged areas of the country, communities which historically have experienced discrimination, you realize the importance of churches and faith in communities at large in those kinds of areas. And if you deal with those kind of areas, you realize that indeed it's oftentimes the churches that can best deliver services and best bring in people who need to be brought in and access these kinds of services. So I've got kind of conflicting viewpoint on that myself. Not that that should matter, but I do think that given the kind of community organizing history which Obama holds, it's very easy to recognize that his desire to use these sort of faith-based programs in order to activate, you know, to, in order to get to root problems in communities is one that comes very naturally and isn't something where he's like moving to the political right, but rather that's just part of who he is.
Yeah. Bill, any thoughts on Barack Obama and faith-based initiatives?
Years ago, John McIver, we've been outsourcing social problems to religious organizations all our lives because they're better at it. And they're in place. I remember McIver talking about it and dealing with a county which will remain nameless. Said these people can't run a two-car funeral, and you've got a problem you got to solve. And there's a group in place. Now I have the same fears Peg has about separation of church and state being downgraded, which it shouldn't be. And I think you can clearly make that separation. You go to the problem solvers when you got a problem, and in often many, many cases, it'll be faith-based people.
Yeah, and we have to watch out. And I know I'm kind of one of those people who errs on the side of caution on these things. But the reality is simply because somebody's part of the faith-based community means it doesn't mean you can cut them out of those problem-solving efforts when they come from the government. I think that's the best way to look at it.
What do we make of John McCain shaking up his campaign and replacing top people? Does this signal, Bill Cross, that his campaign's in trouble?
I keep waiting for him to call me. I could give him some terrific advice.
I'm hoping he doesn't call Bill because I'm afraid I'd agree with the advice he's going to give.
Well, what advice would you give him?
When we were, I'll go back to the 30 years ago to the Dreyfus campaign. Okay, we upset the Republican apple cart. We knocked off their chosen boy, and so now you got the problem of we got all these new people in here who did this for us. And if we make the mistake George McGovern did, who went immediately from the convention to Chicago to see Daley and to Austin to see Johnson, they'll go away. So you got to embrace them, but you embrace them at arm's length. You don't let them take you over because they didn't get you there. These the middle and the Mavericks got you there, and you got to hang on to them because they're going to get you the ultimate victory. And Barack has got the same problem. If he starts playing the old politics game, these people are not yellow dogs. They're going to go away. The yellow dogs are yours for better or worse. And all you got to do is make sure that you don't alarm them, but you cannot cave into them.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Other things in the news this week. It's the oil prices continue to go up. Gas prices continue to go up. AAA out with a survey that says fewer of us are going to be traveling over this 4th of July weekend than than last year, and this is the first decline in that in about a decade. All sorts of other polling out about how this is hurting us financially, how we're changing our lifestyle because of these high gas prices. Bill Cross, is there anything our leaders can do about this, or do we have to, we just have to live with these changes?
Very little. The market does what the market is going to do, and the government is certainly a side issue. The interesting thing is how the market responds. Unfortunately, it impacts Wisconsin and Janesville, but all of a sudden you can't give away an SUV, and people are beginning to talk. John Warner is talking about a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. 30 cents, you save 30 cents a gallon for every 5 miles of an hour less that you drive. You're changing behaviors, and we are in a world where $4 gasoline is going to be our future because of China, India, the lousy dollar, we're making this huge transformation, and we have no energy policy.
Yeah. Well, and let me chime in if I could, Joy, because this is an issue that's near and dear to me. Mm-hmm. About 3-4 years ago, I got together when I was still serving as Attorney General with Tom Miller, AG from Iowa, Lisa Madigan, AG from Illinois, and Jay Nixon, the AG from Missouri. And we got together initially because we were concerned about the escalating prices of natural gas, and then continued in studies, pulling in folks from energy companies, pulling in experts, whatever. And we ended up doing a report to Congress that showed that one of the fundamental issues here was the deregulation of the energy commodities market in the 1990s. And now some of the bigger media sources are starting to look at that kind of thing. But essentially what we did in the mid-1990s was create an energy policy that said that somehow we are going to look at energy in what we were defining as a totally free, unregulated market. And it was the only type of commodity which we took out of the federal auspices of regulation when it came to commodity market trading. So we essentially went from an over-the-counter market like we have in the stock market, an over-the-counter market like we have in pork bellies and oranges and all sorts of commodities we trade. And we said instead that you can trade energy commodities under the counter. And what that has done is afforded speculators opportunities to buy and sell energy commodities as much as 50 or 100 times before they ever reach the market. So from the time something goes from the pump or from the well and gets extracted from the earth to the time it reaches a gas pump, all sorts of people are buying and selling this stuff as a commodity. And as a result of it, we've seen ratcheting spikes in oil and natural gas and fuel oil costs nationwide. And we've seen this trend, and it started exactly when they deregulated the markets. Mm-hmm. Coupled with that, we have had no energy policy, as Bill says, when it comes to things like fuel-efficient cars, a variety of things like that, and what we're doing. And I think the real tragic thing to all of this is that rather than look at those kinds of fundamental problems that exist with the market and exist with our use of the commodity, we are instead talking about drilling on offshore wells and quick fix solutions that are going to do nothing more than give oil companies more money. That's the real tragedy here.
Yeah, let me get Bill in on that. What about, should we be oil drilling, or what do you say about that?
I listened to a talk by the guy who runs Bucyrus Erie a couple of weeks ago in Milwaukee, and he brings up something that's part of this issue. He said, we are the Saudi Arabia of coal, and coal is an energy source, and the Chinese are putting huge amounts, they also have a huge coal resources, are putting huge amounts of money into the gasification of coal. We don't know how to do it yet, and it's still pretty expensive. But there. I would do that. The oil, the predictions on how much new drilling would produce are all over the lot. They're from being discounted as marginal to being the savior. So I have no idea where that answer is, but that will emerge. But in the meantime, think of America as the Saudi Arabia of coal. If coal were turned into a clean fuel, which is not beyond the technological possibility.
Range. But I think, though, Bill, that's the big if. And what I would love to see is for leaders in industry and business to come together to say not just this is another reason why we're going to be more lax on environmental policies, or you have to choose between one or another, but instead look at this as a challenge for innovation where you can say, you know, we have these sources. How do we make them better and more environmentally friendly so that we can move forward in a way where we aren't just trashing the earth and making quick fix bucks as we have in the energy markets recently and move forward in that direction? And I think that's the real challenge for the entire American economy.
It's an affirmation of what Sapphire says. The Chinese are not, they do not have hardening of the arteries. They're not protecting anything the way we are, and they're putting money into this. We're not putting any money into this.
Yeah, take some
Not, we're not innovating.
But the Chinese aren't doing anything on the environment either, it seems.
Well, it turns out they're more environmentally conscious than we give them credit for.
We have a couple of listeners who want to bring up some issues, so let me go to Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. Happy 4th, everyone.
You too.
I read in Reuters news this week, as well as I saw it on TV, that Samuel Israel III, a hedge fund dealer that swindled investors out of $450 million, turned himself into the police to start serving his 20-year prison term. Now, I think since the hedge fund dealers circulate millions of dollars around Washington to the political candidates, are they even registered as lobbyists? Because I can't find anything on the web about if they are or not.
You know anything about this, Bill?
I doubt that they are. No. They're contributors, and their money is coming in through third party organizations and through the political parties, which have fairly unlimited spending and reporting requirements. So that kind of money is in there. Did you notice also that the reason he turned himself in is because his mother told him to?
No. I did not, but mother knows
that was terrific.
Yet another good parenting lesson, correct?
Yeah.
You know, and Bill points something out that's so crucial and on which I know we both are largely in agreement, and that is, you know, whether or not it's hedge fund folks, and I dealt with them in the strong fund situation and others as I was still doing government work. I deal with it now as some of the groups I represent where individuals and companies are so impacted by these private equity buyouts. But the notion of transparency in our economic and political systems is so incredibly important. And Bill mentions it in terms of all these different funds one can create now in order to spend campaign dollars without attributing them to a candidate or even affording individuals to know the source of the dollars that are being spent. At some point, we need to realize that if there's a need to keep something secret, there must be something wrong with it. That's what I always figured. You know, and it goes back to what your mother tells you, I guess. I always told my kids, if you can't tell me where you went tonight, I don't think it's a good place.
Yeah.
You know, and
I agree with you.
Yeah, and you know, and it seems as though many of these challenges we're facing, whether it's the energy stuff, whether it's these escalating costs on elections these days, or whatever, the notion that the public has a right to know that, you know, we're all playing in this playground together, and we need to know what's happening and have a right to know is something that nobody's really grabbing onto in a way that I wish they would.
And so unfair to candidates. You know, candidates have very strict reporting requirements. They got to tell you who gave them the money, how much they gave you, who they are, where they came from, and then they got all the limitations on spending.
I mean, I remember in my last reports, the elections board made me make changes because I had listed people as an attorney from a particular law firm, and the board wanted to know whether or not those people were partners or associates within that firm. So, you know, and they're having me make corrections on that, while at the same time some third-party expenditure spending millions on monies from where we don't know.
Yeah, meanwhile, that's right. Bill Christopherson and R.J. Johnson have got all this dough that they're spending against each other and against for and against candidates. Where did it come from?
Well, you know, and they created an entire political economy, an entire economy within the larger economy based on people who do this sort of work for a living.
That's right.
Let me ask you both briefly, we're coming up on a break. Yesterday, John McCain, in an interview, was asked by the reporter from Fox News, I believe, whether John McCain trusted Barack Obama. And McCain fumbled a little bit and then said, well, I don't trust him when it comes to campaign financing. Yeah. And was getting a jab in there for Barack Obama dropping out of the public financing system. Was that a disappointment to you, Bill Krause?
Oh, yes. And I know why he did it. And so he's got a good reason to do that because of the groups that Peg and I are talking about. If you don't control them, the situation is still out of control.
I have mixed feelings on it because Bill have always been a huge proponent of campaign finance. Yeah. I look at the way elections are run in states like Arizona on a state level, and I think they're, the incentive to do public financing and take public dollars is something we have to recognize works in order to our benefit. But the one thing I will say is this, is that what I have always wished for is that we could create election systems where little people could make a difference, where you could publicly give money in small amounts and a candidate would care about that. And so what I do have to say is that, you know, the reason Barack Obama is opting out of this system isn't because he's got kind of institutional special interest contributions coming in huge dollars on behalf of his campaign or to his campaign, but he's doing it because there are a bunch of us, and I'm included. I've never really given money to a presidential race before who go on the internet or answer a letter or stop down at a headquarters and throw in $20 or $50 or $5 or $100. And the notion of mobilizing this many Americans, millions of Americans, to care enough about a political campaign to throw in a few dollars is encouraging, because I think that's where we would like to see campaigns go.
We are at our break, but go ahead, Bill, a last word on this.
He clearly has figured out how to raise the money. It just doesn't pass the smell test the way he did it, unilaterally and without consulting with McCain, because I was so happy that they were both on the same page, and all of a sudden he turned the page.
Yeah. We're going to talk about more issues in the news this week after this short pause, and we would like you to bring up an issue at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're moving on to other issues, including some issues in the headlines here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Veronica Rickert will be in talking with her first guest about how it's easy for Americans to show their true patriotic colors by something made in America. So someone who's pushing a Made in the USA effort coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking with Peg Lautenschlager, who is an attorney with Lawton & Cates, a former Wisconsin attorney general, former lawmaker, U.S. attorney, and Bill Krause, who is an aide to former Wisconsin Governor Lee Dreyfus and is a board member of Common Cause Wisconsin. And with you, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our numbers, if you'd like to join in and bring up an issue from the news this week. Dave in Wanakee is with us. Hi.
Yes, hello. I saw in the news in the New York Times that it turns out that the techniques, some of the enhanced interrogation techniques used at Guantanamo, came from an Air Force study of Chinese communist interrogation techniques, in which they elicited false confessions from Air Force personnel that were captured during the Korean War. And what I'm wondering is, if we're using this technique to get at, I guess, the truth, that we got from a technique from our enemy used to get false confessions. Does that mean that as long as what we're trying to accomplish is a good thing, that any technique is allowable?
You know, my criminal justice background forces me to weigh in on this because, Dave, I think your point is precisely the one those who have opposed these sorts of techniques ought to be making. You know, we talk about the entire debate has been framed in terms of should a nation like ours be dealing with torture in the way that we are and torturing individuals, and is this the right and humane thing to do? And granted, there is a discussion that ought to be had on that level in that regard. But I think that your issue about reliability of information that's elicited as a result of these kinds of techniques is a fundamental one, that no matter how you feel, whether you're for or against torture, whether or not you think there are certain circumstances where whatever someone has done is so heinous that they maybe need to submit to these sorts of tactics. The reality is there's a real issue of reliability, and if you look at our criminal jurisprudence throughout the nation, courts have always looked at the reliability issue. You know, if you get a confession using these techniques, is it a reliable kind of statement as to what went on? And we don't spend a lot of time focusing on that, but I think it's one which we rightly ought to focus on.
Yeah, do you have anything to add to Bill?
Well, it's the age-old question: do the ends justify the means as a general principle? And then Peg is right. You know, these techniques have been so discredited in history, which you want a confession? Okay, I'll give you a confession. Get me out of here.
Yeah, and in our criminal justice system, you know, things as simple as, you know, have you been denied a glass of water in a couple hours are viewed as relevant to the legitimacy and correctness of a confession. And so if you have that sort of thing, why wouldn't you apply those same principles, which you think, should be applied in the case of, say, a criminal defendant or suspect? Why shouldn't those same principles be applied in the terrorism kind of realm?
Yeah, let's move on to some other issues. Running short on time, and many more issues to cover. Bill Krause, how concerned are you about the current state of the budget and government spending in Wisconsin? Headlines today that the state needs to cut a lot more money to make ends meet. I know the University of Wisconsin system is going to have to take a $25 million cut. What's going on?
Well, maybe sometime in the course of all of this, we will get some understanding about how the money really works. And what happens is the state collects the money and then gives most of it away. They give it to cities, they give it to schools, they fund the University of Wisconsin system part at a decreasing level, they run the court system, they increasingly give it to Medicaid. Medicaid is the killer part of the budget. So the state budget is not labor intensive, it's benefit intensive. So if you start talking about cutting the state budget, you're talking about cutting somebody's benefit, and whether it's the county, the city, the hospital, or the court system. So you got to look at you got to see what the trade-offs are. The thing that is so interesting to me, I've been around long enough, so I've seen when Warren Knowles was elected governor, we were in a recession. He raised taxes. When Lee Dreyfus had to raise the sales tax, Tony Earle had to put on a tax increase. Tommy and Clinton got the free ride of a booming economy. But nobody has ever hesitated saying these services are essential and they're part of the public sector, which is legitimate, and should be funded. But no, nobody has the guts to do that anymore.
You know, it's interesting, Bill, because as you say, I mean, we've gone through this for how many decades now in various machinations, but nobody is willing to take on the mantle of leadership when it comes to explaining what our state budget is all about and kind of where we can cut and why we can cut and what the repercussions are going to be if we do cut. Yeah. And we kind of listen to this mantra of taxes are too high, taxes are high in Wisconsin. Nobody has the courage to say, yes, but our corporate taxes are among the lowest. Nobody has the discussion of responsibility and where do we want it to lie. Should it be on the property tax? Where should it be? What services we want to provide? Nobody wants to stand back and do that big picture analysis.
Yeah, what this is that Governor Doyle's administration has revealed how much the individual state agencies must cut to help balance Wisconsin's budget. It says not only is there that $25 million cut for the University of Wisconsin system, the Department of Natural Resources, $13 million, the Department of Commerce, $10 million. The State Department of Health and Family Services must also cut $53 million from Medicaid. So lots of spending cuts underway.
Yeah, those are fingers in the dike, and the water is coming over the top of the dike, heading into Medicaid and local government.
Yeah, I'm with Bill on this one, and I think I think what we need to focus on as this election year comes up is demanding from those who are running for public office and who are elected there too, demanding that we talk about this frankly and openly and candidly, and kind of where are we going and why are we going there?
Yeah. John in Germantown is with us. Hi, John.
Hello. Earlier this week, it was written in the Fox Politics blog, a reporter named Joe Eaglehawk basically cannot get emails from the governor. She asked for 2 days' worth of emails, and the governor's response has been basically that, well, that request doesn't make sense because it doesn't reasonably describe the record sought or limit them by subject or time. I was just curious what the guest thought of the governor hiding all of his public records that are in his email system.
Well, what, does she want all of his emails forever? I don't understand.
No, for 2 days, February 11th, 12th.
Yeah. Peg, you know much about
that? I'm a huge advocate of public records laws, and whether or not it's the current state attorney general or the governor or whomever, we're at a day and age where you have to produce records, and you ought to. There are certain reasons why certain emails or things can't be distributed publicly, but they don't go to, I don't want that one to be out there. They go to issues like, are you compromising the identity of an informant in a big criminal case? Would you be taking what would otherwise be non-public health care records of a particular employee? There are a variety of things like that. To use the technicalities of the requirements of the public records law, when somebody can then go in and just redraft the request and get the information anyway, I don't think is always a good way to go about things.
I think our administration was the maximum on public disclosure. Our view was we're doing the public's business, and we should be able to. We'll tell them everything they want to know about how we're doing it and what we're doing.
Yeah, and I think and I tried to do that at the AG's office too. Clearly, in an AG's office where you have criminal investigations going on and the like, you have more limited ability to comply with the public records law. But I think we need more officials in state government who view this as an opportunity to do the public good by making your things public, as opposed to those who kind of pick and choose what they're going to release or not release.
Yeah. John, why does this person want the emails? And what are they looking for?
The law doesn't require that I state a reason why I want records.
Yeah, and I am actually with John on this. You know what? You have a right to get a record, and you don't have an obligation under the law to say why. And I think that's an important point, because otherwise we end up with, almost sort of one of these deals like you see in, the kind of stereotype from the 1960s of communist bloc nations, where we want to know what you're doing and why you're doing that kind of thing.
I was just looking for some gossip, that's all.
okay.
anything else on this, Bill?
No.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about only got about 5 minutes here. How about the job cuts being announced by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel? 10% of the workforce, more than 100 jobs, because the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel isn't bringing in the ad revenue it wants to, in order to pay all those people. Is this because people aren't reading newspapers, because advertisers are in a pinch and they're not buying newspaper space, or both, Bill Krause?
It's a lot of things. Among the Milwaukee Journal company, the Journal company is one of the culprits I list on the people who've screwed up our election system. When there used to be we used to have two statewide papers. We now have none. Everything's gone regional. Everybody's in an economic squeeze, and they cut the newsroom. So they're saying, well, the Internet will handle this. Well, the Internet is amazing on the information it has, and it's not bad on sorting it and categorizing it, but it isn't very good on collecting it. Mm-hmm. And as you get rid of reporters, one of the great adages is, if you shut down the two Madison newspapers for 2 weeks, all the radio stations will go out of business, because that's where you're getting your news from, in the AP. So you've got to protect. Jefferson said, if you get a choice between the freedom to vote and a free press, choose a free press. Mm-hmm. And what we're losing is the muscle of the free press, and that is totally unacceptable in a democracy.
Well, and it goes to this whole, whether or not we're discussing oil prices or the ability of information sources, media sources, to exist economically, the reality, it all goes back to this kind of notion of consolidation. And, the little guys get bought out by the big guys, and pretty soon you just have a couple big guys, and then one of the big guys falls, and pretty soon you only have one big guy. And once you get there, you don't have free exchange of information anymore. And I think kind of this notion of a societal awareness that having reporters out there digging, thinking on their own, not necessarily worried about what sells newspapers or what's going to get advertisers mad or not, is where we need to return. This notion of, we can't print that because it will anger our advertisers. Well, then, are we really getting news, or are we just getting propaganda that somebody wants to put out?
There's a stream of criticism about reporters not getting the story right, editors putting on the wrong headline. But the fact is, the function of the press is to make people in power turn square corners.
Mm-hmm.
And Peg and I have both been in a public office. And when I was there, it was so long ago, we would turn immediately to page 5 of the Milwaukee Sentinel in the morning, and we'd know what our day was like.
Yeah.
They were, in an important way, setting the public agenda, because they were the public. We weren't getting public information. We were getting inside information.
Yeah. We only have a minute to go. I promised listeners that I would ask you quickly. Looks like the Green Bay Packers don't want Brett Favre.
I knew you wanted to get to that Brett Favre question,
Joy. I have
Joy.
To. And we have less than 30 seconds. Should he stay? Should he go? What do you think about all this, Peg?
Well, I think that when the final story is told, we will find that the Packers probably moved Brett Favre out in a way that was not what we as Packer fans hoped to see of it. Vince Lombardi ended his career with the Redskins. I hope we aren't going to have to see that with somebody like Brett Favre.
Quickly, Bill.
He should not be the Harold Stassen or the Ralph Nader of football. When you go away, go away.
I agree with you on that, but I also think that somehow having a season as good as he did last year, but then suddenly removing himself was kind of odd. And there's a bigger story there.
We'll have to read more about it in the
days
to
come. We need more reporters, Joy.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks very much, Peg Lautenschlager. We appreciate it. And thanks to Bill Krause. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Joy.
This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
Happy 4th of July from everyone at Wisconsin Public Radio.